You're listening to the Smoked Meat Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Pittman. Smoked Meat is brought to you by Joe's Underground at the corner of 8th and Broad in Augusta, Georgia, in the bottom of the Lamar Building. Such a great place to go. I love them there. They've made me feel like family the first time I walked in, and they've always made me feel like family. They believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. They helped me start this show, and I love Jeremy and the gang for it. I go every chance that I get. You should too. Remember, I goes to Joe's and so should you. That's Joe's Underground at the corner of 8th and Broad in Augusta, Georgia, in the bottom of the Lamar Building. Today, my friends, we have got a rare treat. Such a great guy on here. We have one of the on-air personalities and the owner of W4CY Radio. That's right, we've got the Pipe Man on here today. And we just had a great time talking about a little bit of everything. So we're going to get this beast kicked off right here on Smoked Meat. Hey, so how the hell are you today, Pipe Man?
Oh, I'm doing phenomenal. How are you?
Any better, I'd be big old fat ugly twins. Oh, yeah.
So you must have a face for radio then.
Oh, I've got the perfect face for radio, man. Oh, I do. Oh, yeah. I'm about 5'10", about 300 pounds, and uglier than farting in church.
Wow. Well, I'm 5'7", 138, and I was diagnosed 5 years ago with diabetes and reversed it all with food. But people are like, how'd you get diabetes? You're not fat. And so that's a misnomer. You don't have to be fat to get diabetes. Diabetes is not prejudice.
Yeah, not a bit, because I'm fat and I don't have it. So
yeah, see that? Yeah. And it's people like you that piss me off, man. Like, you know. I'm healthy. I eat healthy. I'm active, and you know, I get all this stuff, and then I see people like two of my best friends are like big as a house, and they don't exercise at all, and they just sit around and they eat like crap, and they're fine. And me, I gotta go through all this bull crap.
Well, I tell you, you know, I've been a member of a gym here for about 3 years now, and it just hadn't really made that much of a difference. I'm actually gonna go by there and find out what's going on. You know. Yeah, I'm tired of paying for that.
Well, it did make a difference because it made your bank account lose weight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm used to being poor. When I was a kid, we were so poor we had to share mouthwash. So that's poor.
Yeah. Well, at least you had some to share, right?
Yeah, you got a point. You know, Christmas was good. Oh, yeah. But... No, man, I've been listening to some of your shows, man, and I'm loving them. You just kind of, you make me proud. I'll put it like that, you know. And I love shows that just like to have fun, and, you know, they teach you a little something here and there, too, and that's always a great thing because you got to have some educational value. And
Yeah, I mean, if you're not having fun, what's the point of being in this business, you know what I mean?
Exactly, and you know, I used to love doing radio when I did it full time. It was so much fun. And I actually started at a little station in McRae, Georgia. And it was WYSC. I think they're actually still on the air. They survived me. But it was what we called a dollar a holler station because a 30-second ad was actually a dollar.
Wow.
And you got a deal if you got a 60-second spot because it was $1.50.
Nice.
We did a lot of commercials.
Is that during the times when, like, my dad used to say, you used to go to the deli and get a corned beef sandwich and Dr. Brown's cream soda for a nickel?
It was, oh, man. It was about 30 years ago. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know what I was getting for a dollar 30 years ago?
What?
A pack of cigarettes. Now you have to not pay your mortgage to buy a pack of cigarettes.
Oh, man, they've done got high enough now to where I just make my own. I went and bought a little machine, and I buy the rollers, the rolls with the filter on them and the pipe tobacco, and they're like 3 cents a piece when I do them. If I buy them, they're like 40 cents a piece. I'm like, no, I'm going to die, but I'm going to be cheap doing it.
So, yeah, I quit smoking a couple years ago, but the last place I smoked, I was in Hawaii, and cigarette packs were $15 to $20 a pack there.
Ooh. Holy crap. Yeah, I believe that would make me quit.
I don't even know how kids can smoke today. Like, you know, at least in my day when I started smoking, it was like 85 cents a pack. But even then, you didn't even have enough money for that. So they used to leave the cigarettes out, you know, in the grocery store right out in a rack right by the front door. And you just walked in and took a pack and left. You know, nowadays, you know, you got to show ID. They hide it behind something. They lock it up. And then on top of it, it costs you $10 million. I don't even know how these kids smoke cigarettes, to be honest. I would have never. They pay as much for a pack of cigarettes as I did to go to a concert and get a T-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's one good thing about back then. We had some really good concerts.
Everybody, no doubt.
Everybody picks on me and says I'm old. I say, hey, at least I got to see the good bands.
Yeah, I don't know if I can remember them, but yeah, they were good. I grew up in Jersey, but then for high school, 1980, I moved to California. So I basically lived on the Sunset Strip during that crazy times of the Sunset Strip. They don't even exist anymore like they were back then. That's why I say, you know, if you remember the 80s at the Sunset Strip, you were not having a good time.
Yeah, you just drove down the Sunset Strip if you remember it in the 80s.
Yeah, no doubt.
Oh, man. I'm a little bit jealous. I ain't going to lie. I mean, I was in small town Georgia, and, you know, it was enough to where the stores in my town did not have tapes that were new. We had to go, you know, like two towns over to the big store to buy a new release tape. Yeah, that sucked.
Well, and I bet in your town it would be dangerous for somebody like me because I'm a Yankee and I'm an Italian Jew. So I probably would not have made out of your town alive.
Oh, man, the Yankee part would have killed you right there.
No doubt about it. I have a funny story about that. So I was driving cross country in California. I was just thinking about this the other day. It's so funny. I must have been like, actually, I was driving back to New Jersey from California, 19 years old, and I was in Louisiana. And, you know, back then we didn't have mobile phones, we didn't have social media, and you didn't have online dating sites. So one of the great ways to pick up on women was when you were driving down the road. Mm-hmm. Like, it literally, there were, I can't tell you how many women I met by driving down the road, and then you're like playing tag on the roadway. And so there was some girl, she was really hot, driving down the road in Louisiana, and we were playing that tag, and then we both ended up pulling off into the service area. Met up, and I didn't need to get a hotel that night because I spent the night at her house. But it was so funny because I think she just wanted to be with me because it was so wrong because I was a Yankee. Like, she kept saying the whole time, like, I can't believe I'm sitting here and I'm doing this with a Yankee. And it was like such taboo. And it's like, man, I hope my parents don't find out about this, you know, type of thing, you know, and I mean, she was an adult, but you know how it is. And we were in the back bayous of Louisiana. Like, I'm surprised that I spent the night and I got out alive. And like, maybe she would have used me and then smoked me for meat in the morning or something.
Oh man, we have some pipe jerky. Oh yeah. But oh yeah. But no, nowadays you'd be all right. I mean, we're full of Yankees down here now, so I can live with it. You'd be fine now. But
yeah, well, I don't know. It still scares me. You know how many times I've driven from Jersey to Florida, and Georgia is the scariest part to get through. And especially, you know, back in the day when you had a radar detector, like, you went to jail in Georgia for a radar detector. I remember being warned, like, you better take your radar detector and put it in the trunk when you get through Georgia.
Yeah, man, they used to hit people hard over those things. And it's like, really? Come on. You know,
yeah, no doubt. There's nobody on the road. Who cares? You know, I'm just trying to get through your state. That's all.
Yeah. So the only reason I'm coming through is because I don't want to go around and go through Alabama.
Yeah, so, that's even scarier.
Yeah. You know, I found out that the toothbrush was invented in Alabama.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they don't even use one there, do
yeah,
they?
Yeah, and anywhere else would be called a teeth brush.
Love it. Well, you know, it is funny where I am here in South Florida. Okay, our studio where I'm in right now is Wellington, which is about as posh as it gets. It's all the polo and equestrian, you know, bougie, snob-ass people. And the town right next to us, it's called Loxahatchee, and we call it Loxah Scratch Me. because they still lynch people in Loxahatchee, and I'm not even kidding about it, you know. And if you have a full set of teeth in Loxahatchee, that's how they know you're not a local.
I've been those places. I think I've lived those places before.
Oh, there's this place called Boonies, and like when they give you the cups for your drinks, they're from like the dollar store, and there's always a fight every night. But the best part about it is it's not guys; it's a girl fight. Two redneck girls just having at it. That's the entertainment.
Oh man,
that's live entertainment right there,
dude. Those are more dangerous than guy fights. I'd rather see two guys gunfighting than two chicks fighting down here.
Oh, no doubt.
That gets nasty quick. They fight dirty. That's kind of chicks that'll hit you with a lamp.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There's no rules whatsoever. And then behind the place is, it's supposed to be like a secret, but everybody knows about it, is that an actual real whorehouse. Like you have to cross the alligators in the swamp to get to it, but it's there.
Nice. Nice. Classy. You know, you got to figure they got security, they got the alligators. You know, they care for their customers. They say customer always comes first.
Absolutely.
Oh man, so how long you been doing Radio Pipe, man? I know it's been a minute.
Well, that's an interesting story because I don't even come from the radio world. So I used to be very big in the investment business in my previous life, and I used to pay to have a radio show and, you know, to get my leads. You know, I own commodity brokerage firms and broker dealer and insurance and all that. My mainstay was commodity. So when you saw those and listen to those radio shows about buy gold, that was me.
Okay.
And so then I'm also a motivational speaker. And so when I left the investment business and I started doing the motivational speaking full time, again, I was doing radio shows to, you know, get people to my seminars and to, you know, help people, empower people and all that. So I went from like going on the radio to take people's money and invest in pork bellies to actually helping them to maybe get their money back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then, you know, I had done that since I was like 21 years old. And, you know, I started back in 1989. And so all through the years, I was not from the radio business, but I was around the radio. And I did from the other side of the fence. And then, so it was 2008. We were in the supposedly worst economy in U.S. history. And we were in a recession, all that crap. And I had just gone through a divorce. I went from making $150,000 a month in the investment business to broke, homeless, no vehicle, no money, no nothing. And that's when I had this brilliant idea of, you know, I think I'm going to open my own radio station. Mm-hmm. And so the thing was, is that internet radio was just in its infancy at that point in time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and nobody really knew much about it. And most of it was crap. And I considered myself like Bill Gates and the rest of them IBM. And what I mean by that is, you know, Bill Gates had this concept. He went to IBM with this concept of a PC in every home. And they were like, you're nuts. You're crazy. That'll never happen. The mainframe will never go away. And we know how that story ended,
yeah.
You know. And so I was the same way. I was like, internet radio is going to take over, you know, and terrestrial is going to go away at some point in time. And you're going to see, you're going to have internet radio in cars, on phones. And we didn't even have smartphones then, you know, and it was like, you're going to have it on tablets and phones and this and that. And I was really ahead of my time with it. But the one thing I noticed, because I was at some small internet radio station down here in Florida, and they were doing it out of their home, and like their dog would come up to the studio table, which was their dining room table, and the cat would be walking on the table. And like, I was embarrassed to bring a guest, you know, and it's like, this is ridiculous. And I was up in New York in real studios in New York before. So it's like, you know, I do believe this is where internet radio is going, but not done like this, you know, and not done DIY. You know, my whole philosophy was, is if you're going to do a station, it has to be just like a terrestrial station. It has to have the look and the feel and run it like a real radio station. So I got, you know, fancy studios, state-of-the-art equipment, got professional engineers, you know, things that other internet places weren't doing. It was like the whole concept of, hey, I can do it out of my home, like, just didn't appeal to me. Like, that doesn't make you a radio station. You know, I'm going to do it at my home with my laptop, no mixer board, no nothing. And I just thought it was absolutely ludicrous. So I did it the right way. And then, you know, I had a different, you know, we were just using internet, but we were doing it the same, and we would do live remotes. I mean, we did everything that terrestrial did. And that's really where it all started. That was the beginning. And here I am today, 13 years later.
Sweet. Yeah, I remember doing remotes. You had to carry that Marty around with you. I hated that thing.
Oh, yeah, that's a pain in the ass. That's what you hire a team for, because, like, you know, I did a lot of live remotes, and now it's like instead I just bring a recorder and record interviews. Because really, you know what? Those live remotes aren't that great anyway. Most of the time there's really nothing going on except a bunch of noise for the radio, meaning, you know. And then you have to set up all this crap, break it all down, bring it with you. It's a lot of work. For what purpose?
Yeah. But, you know, I miss doing radio. That was such a fun gig. And, you know, I understand what you're saying. You know, your equipment, while talent will get you so far, I mean, look at Robert Johnson, you know, one of the greatest blues men ever. You know, just on what they recorded him on. You know, it's horrible audio, but you know he's great. Imagine Robert Johnson recording today.
I mean, exactly.
It'd be a life changer, you know. And when I started this, I knew I wanted to get a board, and I bought just a smallest, cheapest board I could find that, you know, I couldn't even do phone interviews on it. It didn't even have effects out where I could just do a mix minus. And I upgraded, and I just now, about a month ago, upgraded to a new board. This thing is amazing. You know, I love this thing. It's that Zoom L8.
Yeah.
Great board for podcasting.
Yeah, see, and just to give you an example, and you'll understand this, I'm in my studio right now talking to you, and I'm using my board talking to you, and my board has 24 pots in it and two separate effect things, plus an equalizer. So it's a major board, you know, and nobody in internet radio uses stuff like this. But we also, we've had full bands come in the studio just like they would on Howard Stern or something like that and perform, and, you know, we have the ability to do it and do it right.
Yeah, and it feels good, you know, and I love my mics. I used the Rode Pod mic, and I tell you, I'd put it up against any mic I ever had on the radio. I love this thing. It's the shock mounts built into the capsule. It's got the pop filter built right in. And I mean, it was $99 for the money. It's an awesome mic.
That's nice. Yeah. You'll have to send me a link to that. I'll have to check that out. What we use in the studio here are Audio Technicas, and they're pretty good mics, but that sounds pretty cool, too. I'd like to check that out. Sure.
Very cool. Yeah, I'll send you a link to it, man. I will definitely do that, because I'm always up for helping folks, because that's how we do this. You know, you got to help people.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing, too. I run my radio old school, like, not the corporate radio bullcrap, which ruined radio. You know, I've had people from the local terrestrial stations here come into the studio, and they're like, and even do shows here and stuff. And they're like, wow, it's like radio used to be, you know, when it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my first station, that Dollar Holler station, my guidelines were don't cuss and play your spots.
Yep.
And that was my only rules. And that was so amazing. I had such a good time. Like, it was when Achy Breaky Heart was big.
Oh, there you go.
And I despise that song.
And now we have, instead of that, we have Miley twerking.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to where when anyone would call and request that song, I would play it. But I would play it by Alvin and the Chipmunks.
I love it.
But, yeah. And then, you know, the last station I was at, it was a great station. I was on overnights, and my programming director, he gave us our list, and I mean, down to the second, everything. And he would tell us, take requests. Okay. I'd take requests. Then he'd call me like 3 a.m. Why are you playing this song? It's a request. He's like, don't take requests. Well, you told me to. And he said, no, just tell them that. Said if they don't hear their song, they'll think they missed it. And if they do hear it, it's probably in the rotation anyway. So you'll be a hero. I'm like, well, that's garbage. And
well, you know what's weird is the rules for internet radio. And a lot of the internet radio people don't know there's actually regulations. Do you know that if somebody requests a song on internet live internet radio, you can't play that song for at least an hour?
I did not know that.
Like, what's the point of a request then? That's stupid. But yeah, the regulations, like, it's so funny. They're lax in so many areas that they probably shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And then they're strict in the stupid areas. Like, you also, like, remember the days when you could do a block of songs by an artist? You can't do that in internet radio. You cannot play more than 2 songs within an hour by the same artist.
Oh, man, the Friday Night Rock block would be gone.
Yeah, there is not. You can't do a rock block on internet radio.
Oh, man. I don't like that. I'm glad you can still do 2 in a row. I mean, 2 for Tuesdays is a staple everywhere.
Yeah, I don't even know if you can do them 2 in a row. But I don't remember. I have to look that up. And then the other thing is, because I also, that's the other thing about running a real radio station. Like, I pay for licensing with ASCAP, BMI, Sound Exchange, CSAC. I do reporting, pay royalties. Most of these internet people are not doing it, and they're actually breaking the law. And, you know, I'm a firm believer, too. I believe in the artists. The artists are getting screwed enough nowadays that, you know, they deserve to get paid. And when I talk to other people in internet radio, they're like, well, they should just let me play their song. And I'm like, well, do you work for free? You know, like, that's what you're asking them to do. That's, let them get paid. You're getting paid. Let them get paid, you know, because, you know, some of these radio stations are making money and they're not paying, and I think it's not fair at all. So we do all that legally, and, you know, so that's why we're very much into the rules and the regs, and as much as I hate the rules and regs, you know, you got to do it right, because that's the other thing. That's the other reason you're going to stick around, you know, because they're already starting to crack down. And I remember a couple years ago, they shut down a whole bunch of radio stations, like 16,000 radio stations that were, including Live 365, for violating these rules that most of the people didn't even know they had to follow the rules. And even Spotify got fined like $500,000.
Oh, excuse me, man. Yeah, that's, you know, I believe in, I don't do music that I haven't paid for, because that's garbage. Like I say, you gotta pay the people who make this music. They don't do it for free.
And they're already screwed.
Yeah.
And especially now during COVID, because the only way they make money nowadays, like, I mean, they get a couple cents on a stream. It's not like the old days. So the only way they make money is touring, and now they can't even tour because of COVID. So I want to tell everybody, and tell your listeners and everybody, support your artists right now, because they are hurting, and we need them to stick around, because that's the only sanity we have right now, because the freaking world has gone insane, man. We need music for some therapy, because I tell you what, I don't even know anymore. Like, just whacked out of their mind right now, and for good reason. I mean, it's a wild, wild time. It's funny, the other day, you know, we're in South Florida. We have storms all the time, and this girl I'm friends with on Facebook, she was talking all this conspiracy theory because there was lightning going on that night. And I just commented, I'm like, you do realize you live in Florida, right? Like, that's kind of normal here.
Oh, man. Oh, don't even get me cracked up on conspiracy theories. I love them. I can do shows about those. Oh, man, I love them.
Oh, well, they're out full force right now.
Oh, like, man. I used to work.
You know.
I used to work with a guy who was really hardcore into them, and he believed every one of them, like, really big. And we were on the ambulance one day, and it was hot. I mean, it was so hot you saw birds pulling worms out of the ground with oven mitts. And we had stopped by the store, and he had gotten a nice cold Pepsi. And we're sitting on the porch of the station talking, And I start telling about dihydrogen monoxide. And I said, man, the government, it's in everything. It's regulated through the government. I said, I mean, if you have too much of it, it can kill you. If you don't have enough of it, it can kill you. It's that dangerous. And I said, it's even in that Pepsi you're drinking right there. And he took this ice cold brand new Pepsi and threw it across the yard. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He says, it's got dihydrogen monoxide in it. I said, that's water, H2O. Yeah. Oh, yeah. During the Mayan calendar thing, I thought we were going to have to put him down, man. Oh, it was brutal. But he's
well,
so
how
much
about
fun.
As a Jew, I love this one. There's the guy, David Icke, out of England, out of the UK. He's the one that basically started pretty much every conspiracy theory. He's the one that started the whole thing about the New World Order and that all these world leaders are all alien reptilian shapeshifters and the whole thing.
I've seen those videos.
He also, okay, he has this theory. Well, he has two theories about the Holocaust. One is that it didn't happen, okay? But the other theory that he really spreads a lot is that the Jews paid Hitler to do it. And it's like, come on. Can you people, and there's people that follow this dude. It's like, come on, people. Can you use a little common sense? Like, nobody has common sense anymore. Yeah, the Jews paid Hitler so that he could kill 6 million of their family members. Yeah, that makes sense. Like, I mean, there's some family members that piss me off, and certainly I wouldn't mind, but not 6 million of them.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't pay somebody to do it. I would do it myself. You know, I would not pay somebody to do it. Yeah, I want to keep my money. I don't want to give it to somebody else.
Exactly. Oh, man. Yeah, I've seen the shape-shifting videos, and they're hilarious.
Well, that's what's supposedly going on right now. This is all part of that. This whole COVID thing is all part of the reptilian shapeshifters taking over, you know, and that's the reason why we have to wear the mask and social distancing. They're conditioning us right now. And, you know, it's pretty funny. I've interviewed some bands recently that are in other countries, and we were talking about the whole idea of how here in the United States, you know, we think that wearing a mask is some conspiracy to take away our rights and freedom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, it's like, do I like the mask? No. Well, I have to wear it. 1% of my day. Like, I don't have to wear it at home. I don't have to wear it in the studio. If I walk in a store, so big freaking deal, you know? And like, so what if it doesn't work? At least it's something. It's not some conspiracy to try to control me. But here's the thing. In other countries besides America, they have a little bit of common sense. And so I was talking to these other artists, and they're like, yeah, in our country, as soon as they told us to stay home and social distance and not wear masks, we all just did it. We didn't think our rights were being taken away. We didn't think our freedoms were being taken away. We just did what they said. And guess what? Now we don't have any cases, and we're doing whatever we want. And that's the problem. These idiots, and we have a lot of them here in Florida. Let me tell you, I got some great stories. But, you know, I mean, this is why we're still dealing with this now, and it's getting worse. Like, let's just buckle down, do what we got to do, and end it already. I mean, we have people down here, I kid you not, okay, that take their mask off. I've seen it firsthand. Take their mask off to cough. Like, you do realize it's the whole point of the mask. Then there's these other people that cut a hole in the mask so they can breathe.
Yeah.
Again, Floridian stupidity. And then, you know, we had it good down here, okay? So you could go boating, which is a great way of social distance. You get out there. You're by yourself, you're sunshine, vitamin D, fresh air. Mm-hmm. These idiots are sitting there, and instead of doing that, they're tying all the boats together, going to a sandbar and partying like it's like we're having a, you know, end of the world party or something. You know, it's just, I mean, we are the land of real zombies. You remember that? And that's a true story, that we had people on those bath salts that became zombies down here. Mm-hmm. Like, this place... you know, I'll tell you what, I, as a New York, New Jersey Italian Jew, I feel safer in Georgia in your hometown than I do here, I tell you, because at least people there are smarter, except I did see a picture of the Georgia schools opening up, and that was a pretty scary sight if that picture is true, because it looked like people were just like sardine canned together and no mask. To me, I was just picturing this Corona Petri dish.
Yeah.
And then, Jesus Christ, Walmart, okay? Like, I don't like Walmart on a regular day. Jews don't go to Walmart. Like, it's just not our style, okay? But now, I drive by Walmart, even when we were locked down and places were closed and Walmart is supposedly essential. I don't know what it's essential for. Is it essential for beating your kid, or is it essential for, you know, killing you? I don't know what it's essential for, but it was essential for something. And you would think it was Black Friday every day. The place is like, I'm driving by going, oh my God, I don't even want to be anywhere near there. That's like just an infestation of coronavirus.
Oh, and in their defense now, if you spend much time in Walmart, you're pretty much immune to corona. it is not the worst thing you'll ever be exposed to, I promise.
Well, that is probably true, but that is one the place where I was standing there and saw somebody take their mask off to cough in the store.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, talk about the schools. You know, it's my youngest daughter starts her senior year on the 17th. That sucks, man, because it's her senior year. But at the same time, you know, they do have a choice whether they want to go to school physically or do it online. And as bad as we hate it, we're going to do online because, you know, like I say, you can put all the things in place you want, but a teenager's not going to stay 6 feet away from their little group and have their mask on. It's not going to happen. Kids are not going to do it. You got to make them. It is what it is. And I hate it because it's her senior year. We got into so much crap during our senior years, man. But I'd rather her have a freshman year of college. You know, I don't want her sick.
Oh, yeah. And the fact is you're right. Because when you're a teenager, you're just stupid. Like, I remember studying in psychology class in college that the definition of insanity is adolescence. Like, if you want to have a case study for, like, they literally said, the professor was saying that teenagers are literally textbook insane. And I think back to when I was a teenager, and that is so true. I mean, like this. I'm surprised that I am still either alive and not in prison for the rest, or not in prison for the rest of my life, or both from shit I did as a teenager.
Oh, man. I remember watching MacGyver and learning stuff off of there. You know, me and some of my friends actually made a damn ampho bomb and nearly blew out the side of this guy's pond dam with it one night just because we saw it on MacGyver, and it worked.
One of my friends brought a bazooka to school.
Checkmate.
Oh, my. And then I remember there was this one dude we didn't like, and we used to wait for him to walk by my friend's house, and we would shoot him with a BB gun as he was walking by.
Yep. Yeah, we used to make potato cannons.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, you ain't lived. You've launched a potato 300 yards. Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
And then aimed it at your friend who was 20 yards away and just to watch him run. That was the best part.
Oh, yeah.
I think
I remember being in the vice principal's office like pretty much every day and just denying till I die and just laughing to myself like, you are not going to be able to prove shit. Like, he kept trying to catch me and mope. I remember one time something happened. He had a phone recording of me. This was before we had cell phones. And he played it for me, and he's like, tell me that isn't you. I'm like, nope, not me. And then my dad was oblivious, so I used to sign the signature card. Like, my dad was a heavy partier, so, like, anytime I just wanted to ditch, I just wrote myself a note.
No, if he'd ever signed one normally, you'd have gotten in trouble for that one instead.
Yeah, oh, no doubt about it.
Oh, man.
Speaking of my dad, talking about the stuff you're talking about, here's a great story. So I was in California in high school, and my dad had this big red Buick. And I decided to take it four-wheeling in the mountains.
Oh.
And then it was fine until I got to the bottom and there was like this huge manhole cover that was sticking up and it hit the muffler and knocked the muffler off.
Oh.
Like, oh, shit. And so I had this friend that was a mechanic. I brought by his shop and he just wired it up with a coat hanger. He's like, just drive it straight home because that thing's going to fall. Guaranteed when your dad takes the car to work tomorrow. Like, do not drive it too far. It's only holding it up to get you home. Sure enough, so it was me and my best bro, because my best bro ran away from home and lived with me and my dad. We bring it home. The next day, my dad goes to work, and he gets home from work, and he's like, boys, you're not going to believe what happened to me today. I'm driving up the 101 coming home, and the fucking muffler fell off. And it was everything in our power to just not die laughing. Like, we had to hold it all in, man. But it was like, and I don't even know if I ever admitted that one to him. You know how when you get older, there's shit you admit to your dad or your mom, like, that they didn't know, that they thought they... See, my kids didn't get away with stuff like that. I was two steps ahead of them all the time, you know. It was funny. One time, my two older kids, they were looking to sneak out of the house. And I was, you know, back when you didn't have cell phones, you could eavesdrop on your kids' conversations. You know, you had the landline, and you just picked up the landline in your bedroom and listen. And they had this elaborate plan to, you know, get out of the house, break out of the house and stuff. And so we lived on the end of a cul-de-sac with the woods in our backyard, and we had a trampoline. So, you know, at night, I let them sneak out, and I was outside laying on the trampoline. They couldn't see me. It was too dark. We're in the middle of the woods. And I see, and it's like one road coming to the house. I see their friend pull up in the car and kill the lights and coast down the road to get them. And then they jump in, they leave. And then I ran in the house, and I just, and their bedroom was on the second floor, and they made this whole get up so they could get back up into the house, you know, like they took the patio furniture, set it up by the thing so they could climb up on the roof. And so I ran in and I started just locking every window and every door in the house. And my ex, she was like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, you know, the kids just snuck out of the house. And, well, why didn't you stop them? She starts yelling at me. I'm like, because this is going to be a lot more fun. What's going to happen is they're going to come back, they're going to climb up on the roof. They're going to try to get in the window, find that it's locked. They're going to be like, oh, shit. And they're going to come to the front door and knock on the door where I'll be waiting. Well, part of that plan worked. So exactly what I said happened. I just waited. They came. And then all of a sudden, you know, my son, he's climbing up on the roof. I hear him go, shit. But then what I didn't count on is they climbed back down and they just left again. So then they were like loitering at the 7-Eleven, and the cops brought them home at like 2 o'clock in the morning while I was waiting. And I just had a grin on my face when the cops brought them. So the next day was my youngest daughter's fifth birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, man.
So I was always creative with punishments, because you know what? Most of the stuff parents do, it doesn't work, and kids don't care. You got to do something that they're going to remember, and they're not ever going to do that crap again. So I made sandwich boards, you know, the big poster boards front and back with a rope tied to them, and it said, I will not sneak out of the house and be brought home by the cops at 2 o'clock in the morning ever again. And I said to them, here's what's going to happen. You're going to wear these sandwich boards at Chuck E. Cheese at your sister's birthday party. And if you refuse, there's a worse option. So you don't really have a choice. And I am going to take pictures and I'm going to videotape it. And this was before social media and before smartphones. So it was like literally a video camera. And you videotaped it on a VHS.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and if you ever try this shit again, I'm going to get all your teenage friends and I'm going to invite them over to the house and I'm going to show them some home movies. And then it was really good because we're at Chuck E. Cheese and my one daughter, who was all cocky, she was like, you know, laughing about it, you know, thinking like, ah, this is no big deal, blah, blah, blah. Lucky me, there was a a table of about 20 80-plus-year-old Jewish ladies. And one of them comes over and sees her thing and says, "Oh, my God, will you look at this? Hey, Rose, come over here and check this out." And she brought all her friends over. My daughter was so freaking pissed because now it was becoming a big scene, you know?
Yeah,
and then so then we left Chuck E. Cheese, and they started up in the car on the way home. Now, on the way home, we passed by the mall, which is their hangout. And I was like, "You better chill it out right now, because I'll tell you what, you got through it, but if you keep mouthing off to me, the next stop is the mall." And they shut. But I will tell you right now, they never snuck out of the house ever again, and they've warned their younger siblings as well.
Nice. I like the fact that instead of Dragon Con at Chuck E. Cheese, y'all ran into Bubble Con.
Yeah, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. Great.
I couldn't have planned it better if I paid these old ladies. I mean, it was just classic.
Oh, man. That is so beautiful. Yeah, I love creative punishments because, like I say, most things don't stick. Most things wind up punishing the parent more. And, you know, it's...
Yeah. Hey, when you do stuff like grounding them, too, it punishes you. Because either you can't go anywhere, or if you do, they're just going to sneak out. My dad used to punish me, and then he'd go out partying, and I'd leave, and I knew when he came back, and he was oblivious. He didn't know. Like, what kind of punishment is this? This is stupid.
Yeah. I mean, hell, you send a kid to their room today, and okay. They got computers, phone, everything there. Hell, send me. I thought I was cool because I had a 13-inch black and white TV in my room. Oh, I was.
Yeah, no doubt, right? Yeah, and you know what? Nowadays, if you wanted to punish your kids, you'd make them go outside.
Yeah.
Like, sending them to their room is like a reward.
Yeah. And I did see a neat thing. My kids have actually towed the line since I saw this and kind of mentioned it to them. Told them, I said, "I'm not going to take your electronics. I'm just going to take all your chargers. That way they can just watch them slowly drain."
Oh, yeah, that's even better. That's like a slow death.
Yeah. That's kind of like just stabbing somebody in the liver as opposed to, you know, just, yeah, you're just going to go and get them, let them just go on slow.
No doubt. I got great parent stories. I was definitely creative. I was also a jokester, too. And, you know, my son just posted something. He's 35. He posted something on social media recently about having to do with, you know, being a father to your kid. I got to find it while we're on here. And it's just a prank type of thing. And I was like, I trained you. I commented. I said, "I trained you right." So I'll tell you a quick story that's great is that, you know, he came to me with some very serious advice one time during a very crucial age. And he basically came up to me. He's like, "Dad, how do you get rid of dingleberries?" And he was dead freaking serious, okay? And I was like, and I just with a total straight face, didn't even hesitate, said, "I'm like, you mean you don't shave there?" And that was before manscaping, like people manscape now. So then I forgot about it, walked away. A couple days later, he comes up to me. He's like, "Man, it itches." And I didn't even know what he was talking about at first because I forgot. And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Well, I did what you told me to." And I'm like, "Oh, my God." And I just started dying laughing. I'm like, "How do you even do that?" And we joke about it now to this day. And he says, "Yeah, I invented manscaping." You know, it's like something he does to this day. But the thing he's pissed off most about to this day, that he's most pissed about, is that when he was in first grade, he was lying about something. He just was doing the whole deny till you die thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave him one last chance to fess up. And I said, "I have a surefire lie detector test. So this is your last chance to tell me the truth. Because then I'm giving you the lie detector test, and it will tell me if you're lying or not." And he just still stuck to it. So basically, the lie detector test, and I told him how it would work. I'm like, "I'm going to take this cup, and I'm going to pour water in it, and I'm going to pour oil in it, and I'm going to mix it up. And if the oil rises to the top, you're lying. So then in middle school, he tells me later, he's in middle school one day, and they're in science class where they're doing this project with the oil and water. And he yelled out in class, like he got in trouble because he yelled out in class, "That asshole." Because that was when he realized that it was bullshit.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, I like the Dinkleberry story, but here's the kind of dad that I am. I'd have just looked up from what I was doing and said, duct tape, and just went back to what I was doing. That the shaving thing, awesome. Duct tape, instant gratification.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you,
Papa. Well, that is the redneck way to manscape, isn't it?
It is. It is. Oh, yeah. Little duct tape, and if you get really creative, you can cut shapes in the duct tape first. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm just going to go on ahead and tell you now. You know, I learned this from Rodney Carrington. If you try and shave a heart down there, it just winds up looking like a liver. So. Oh, man. Well, Pipe Man, I tell you, dude, I'm having a ball. You know, you're welcome on here anytime. I don't care when or what, man. All you got to do is holler and say, "Fat boy, let's record."
And we'll have to bring you on my show, too. And then, you know, I can, you know, embarrass you, too, and, you know, make you the center of all the butts of my jokes.
Hey, that'll work. That'll work, man. I know I want everybody to listen to W4CY because I know you're on there from 10 to 12 on weekdays, Eastern.
That's correct. And I also, so that's my live show is called The Adventures of Pipe Man. And we also take parts of that and put it on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, and about 100 others. And I do music interviews that you can catch on Pipe Man in the Pit on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts. And there's all kinds of things I do. And definitely going to want to follow me on social media because The Adventures of Pipe Man is not just the name of a show. It's the real deal. I'm doing all kinds of adventures. Like, you never even know what's going to happen next. So all you got to do is look for Pipe Man Radio, P-I-P-E-M-A-N Radio. Follow me. I'm on everything. I'm on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, TikTok, TikTok, Insta, Fanny, and Instagram too, you know, and, you know, I'm on, you know, my favorite, whatever. You know, if there's a social media thing on out there, I'm on it. And if there's a make-believe one, I'm on that one, too.
Fancy. Well, outstanding, man. And, yeah, we're definitely going to follow because you're an interesting cat. I know this. But, oh, yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you, sir. And it's been my pleasure and honor that you allowed me on your show because, you know, I'm like banned from pretty much every show in the United States. So I had to like pay off some Mexican politician to get on your show. So thanks a lot.
Hey, that's how I got you on my show. What the hell?